to RK-4. That's 7, including Sign, Wanderlei, and me. We'll take care of it ourselves. I should have known better than to rely on Jared. That's the second time he's failed me. He underestimates everyone. But no artist can stand against 7. Forget all this marshalling of power. We'll each work independently. During the night, the 7 of us will each form a bridge and hold it. Then the Shadi will cross. The outer wall has fallen. The gate's gone. Their orders will be to slaughter everyone on that side of the river.
All the rooms, you mean?
I mean everyone.
But my Fane, Terene said, shocked. There are hundreds of Frey in Alanrist. Not all of them are soldiers. And those who are haven't participated in the fight. Well, not as far as we can tell.
All of them, Lothian ordered. Everyone who wanted to go, left. No one over there is being held against their will. They chose that side of the river. They chose to defy me. Kill them all, Terene. Every last one.
Terene stared in disbelief for only a second, then bowed.
As you wish.
Your father sounds upset.
Wraith stood in the middle of what used to be the lower courtyard. What had once been a grand fortress of soaring walls and majestic towers was little more than a hillside again, a barren crag littered with piles of broken stone and broken bodies. Hundreds had been crushed by the collapse. Some were trapped when buildings came down. Others were below walls that toppled. When it became apparent that the Frey had given up their assault for that day, the remaining inhabitants of Alanrist began the sad and exhausting process of digging out the dead. With only one good arm, Wraith was useless. He stood in the center of the rubble and simply watched as people he knew were pulled back into the sun. A face here, a name there, from Dalren or Daltire, Melon, Warwick, and Menahan, folks he'd known for only a year. Thinking about it, he really didn't know any of them. Wraith had kept to himself, stayed apart, avoided friendships and connections. Better that way, he'd felt. No sense in establishing ties that might be hard to break. But looking at their bloodied faces, he discovered something terrible. He hadn't managed to remain as distant as he thought. Tope Highland was laid beside his last 2 sons, Colin and Chris, both great dancers and singers, who displayed their talents on many a night after the late meal. Their mother was arranging marriages for the 2 lads with girls from Menahan, and neither was anxious to see whom their mother had picked. Tope's other son, Kurt, who was the same age as Tesh, had died the day before. Filson the Lamp was stretched out on a small bit of still-visible grass across from Tope's family. He'd been a quiet man, once the only full-time lampmaker in Dalren, but few knew him as the Lamp any more. He was a soldier, one of Moya's archers. Filson had befriended a stray dog that wandered the wrist. He fed the bony animal leftovers from his meals, causing the animal to follow him everywhere. Wraith caught him giving the dog as much as half his food. The fool was going hungry to feed a mangy mutt. Next to him were Gilroy and his wife Arlena. Her head had been caved in. Wraith identified Arlena by the dress. She only had the one. Before he knew it, Wraith found himself weeping.
I only stayed in Dalren for Persephone. She was all I wanted, all I cared about. None of these others mattered. So why, in Tetlin's name, do I feel so awful?
Wraith?
He turned and saw Malcolm near Roan's smithy, one of the few structures still intact. The thin man was out of his armour, back to wearing the old wool clothes Bryn's mother, Sarah, had made him. What a year ago had been clean and neat was as stained and tattered as Malcolm's old robe had been. The man was hard on clothes. He waved Wraith over, then went into the workshop. Moving slowly, Wraith crossed the courtyard and followed him. Inside, the place was a cave, dark except for the eerie orange light thrown by the forge and the patch of sunlight entering the doorway. The dwarfs and Roan were there, which was to be expected, but Tressa also stood in the shadows. Suri knelt on the floor beside Arion, who lay on Roan's cot. A blanket was pulled to the dead Frey's neck, as if she were sleeping. Wraith paused to stare at her a moment. The others probably thought he was paying respect, or was overcome by grief. Neither was in his mind. A dead Frey was still such a strange thing. Arion was pale, but she always had been. Yet on that cot, catching most of the doorway light, she appeared ghost-like, so fragile that he found it difficult to accept that she had ever been alive. As he stared, Wraith realized, with a good deal of reluctance, that he had liked Arion. He had liked her a lot, though he couldn't remember a single conversation they had shared. Suri's eyes were puffy and red, her cheeks streaked with tear tracks. Wraith knew how close the two had been. Suri had often spoken of Arion as if she were an older sister or even her mother. A strange way for a human to feel about a Frey. But then again, Suri was anything but usual. That was what he liked the most about her. She could find the person inside the drapery, see the truth behind lies, and she cared for those uncared for by others. That he was Dorian never mattered to her, and even if he knew nothing about the one called Senslaw, Wraith would have felt her loss because Suri loved her. He wished he could help, but knew from experience there were some things no one could fix. Frost, flood, and rain busied themselves by adding wood to the furnace and jabbing pokers into the coals. Occasionally, they stole looks over their shoulders. Roan sat on her stool at the work table, watching. She wore a leather apron looped around her neck and extending below her knees. Her dark hair was tied up out of the way, a lone lock dangling over her forehead. Malcolm waited. He stood very nearly in the middle of the smithy, between the assembly table and a stack of wooden buckets. Once Wraith moved away from Arion, Malcolm folded his hands before him in a deliberate manner that announced sincerity.
"What I have to say to you now is incredibly important. More important than anything I've told anyone in a very long time. I might stumble here and there, because it's not an easy thing to talk about, so please, bear with me."
Wraith had never heard him speak so gravely before, and for a moment he didn't sound like Malcolm. Not the man he met on a fork between two rivers, the one who had followed him blindly for a year, the one who didn't know which animals could be petted and which would attack. This was someone else.
"Want us to leave?" Roan asked.
She was so convinced of the expected answer that she got to her feet.
"No," Malcolm replied. "What I have to say is for everyone here."
Roan stopped, confusion swimming in her eyes. She eased back onto her stool. At the same time, the dwarfs put down the pokers and paused to listen.
"We have a problem," Malcolm began. "A very serious one. The Frey outnumber us 3-1. Our rune-etched walls are broken, the only things protecting us are gone, and most of our best soldiers are dead."
He gestured at Wraith.
"Or wounded."
"What do we need walls for?" Wraith said. "The bridge is gone."
Malcolm shook his head. "Lack of a bridge won't stop them. They still have Miralith. They will use the art to extend the stone of the cliff walls. I told Suri to destroy the bridge only to give us this time to prepare."
"That was you?"
Suri asked.
Malcolm nodded,
then turned to Suri and offered her a sympathetic smile.
"You can't stop them, can you?"
Suri shook her head.
"I'm not strong enough."
Suri touched Arion's hand. "She might have been, but not me."
"Arion couldn't have stopped them either," Malcolm said. "And tonight the Fane's Miralith will create new bridges, and his army will cross over the Burn River with orders to kill everyone. You might disrupt one or two of the bridges, Suri, but you won't be able to take down all 7.
"7? Wait,"
Frost said, rubbing his beard the way he did when he was pondering.
"How do you know there will be 7? How do you know any of this?"
Malcolm shook his head.
"That's not important at the moment. Just consider it a good guess. How we stop them is what we must discuss."
Suri looked back at Arion and shook her head.
"We can't."
"You sure?" Malcolm asked.
"Pretty."
She didn't finish, and the tears flowed again.
"Isn't this Nephron and Persephone's problem to solve?"
Flood asked. His voice had an odd sound, more gravelly than usual. Wraith didn't understand the change. He sounded upset, and his anger grew each time he looked at Arion's face. It didn't make sense. The dwarfs hated Arion. Everyone knew that.
"They can't solve this," Malcolm said. "But the people in this room can."
This conjured a round of puzzled faces as they looked to one another for hints of understanding. They found none.
"What can we do against an army of Frey that Nephron and Kenic Persephone can't?"
Frost asked.
"He means me,"
Suri said, shaking her head.
"But I can't..." "Actually, I mean everyone," Malcolm said. "Every single person in this room must do their part."
This brought a look of absurd disbelief from Tressa, who remained uncharacteristically silent.
"There's nothing I can do,"
Suri was shaking her head.
"If they hit me with the same power as before, I can't—"
"They will hit you, and with more than last time,"
Malcolm assured her.
"Only one Miralith fought you today. But after the bridges are made and the troops are across, all 7 will focus on you. Once you are gone, we won't stand a chance. The Frey army will butcher every living soul while the Miralith obliterates what remains of the city."
"If what you say is true, we don't actually have a problem,"
Wraith said.
"We have a lack of hope."
"Gifford might come back,"
Roan said, causing everyone to look her way. The sudden attention caused her to shrink back, drawing up her knees and hugging them. Still, she managed to add in an unusually proud tone,
"He rode a horse to fetch the Gula."
Tressa was shaking her head, but Malcolm smiled at Roan, a warm, encouraging look, accompanied by a confident nod.
"Yes, I honestly think he will," But it won't be enough, and it won't be in time. And the Gula don't have armor. They lack the protection of the Orinfar. Were they here now, they would be obliterated by the Fane's Miralief.
Roan looked guilty.
It's not your fault. You and your army of smiths did an amazing job. No one could have done more. There simply wasn't time.
Then it really is over, Wraith said. There's nothing we can do.
No, Malcolm replied,
and shifted his sight back toward Suri.
She knows a way.
The mystic's tattoos drew together in a confused furrow on her brow.
But you just said I wasn't strong enough against all of them.
He nodded.
But you know something they don't. You know how to make something that the Miralith's magic would be powerless against.
Suri appeared even more puzzled, and was shaking her head.
I don't know what...
She froze. The tattoos around her eyes separated, and her brows jumped up. Her mouth opened, first in understanding, then in horror. The mystic's head began shaking rapidly.
No, not that.
You can do it, Malcolm said softly. You've done it before.
No, I can't.
Suri inched back, withdrawing from him, from all of them. Her fear-filled eyes darted to each of their faces, as if they all plotted her death.
It's the only thing that will save us.
Roan had her hands up to her mouth, her eyes reflecting Suri's horror. Frost dropped the tongs he was holding, and Rain joined Suri in shaking his head.
"What's going on?" Wraith asked.
"What are you talking about?"
Malcolm replied by looking at Suri, who refused to answer. No one else said a word.
"Everyone knows what's going on but me,"
Wraith said. He focused on Roan.
"What is it?"
The woman lowered her hands, and after a fleeting glance toward Suri, she said,
"He wants her to make another Gilarabrin."
At the sound of the word, Malcolm turned with a curious look.
"Gilarabrin?"
Roan nodded. "That was her name." Malcolm thought a moment, then nodded.
"Oh, I see.
Yes, of course.
I can't do it."
Suri's head was down, her fingers raking through her short hair. She gripped and pulled, making herself wince.
"A Gilarabrin would be immune to their magic," Malcolm told her. "It could end this battle. Might even end the war."
"But I can't,"
Suri nearly screamed.
"I don't understand. Why can't you make this thing if it will save us?"
Wraith asked. Again, Suri didn't answer. She drew in her arms and legs, closing on herself, collapsing. She gazed at all of them.
"Don't ask me to do that. Not again."
Wraith looked to the others, then finally just stared at Roan once more.
"To make a Gilarabrin, she has to kill an animal," Roan explained.
"That's no problem at all," Tressa said. "There's a dog, a filthy mutt that Filson used to feed, that—"
"No!"
Suri erupted in anger.
"Not an animal! I don't have to kill an animal! I have to kill... It has to be a sacrifice!"
"Like a lamb?" Wraith asked.
"Lambs were animals, but that's what they always used as sacrifices in Dorea."
"No, not like a lamb. Not a killing. A real sacrifice. This isn't about slaughtering some innocent beast.
It isn't about destroying what might have been a nice meal. It has to be real, not symbolic. And it has to be mine. I have to destroy. I have to take a life that matters to me. Don't you understand? I have to kill someone I love.
By the surprise on the faces, this was news to everyone, except Malcolm, who placed a comforting hand on Suri's shoulder. In order to save the lives of everyone who went to Neith, Malcolm told Wraith, Suri sacrificed Mina. Wraith knew the wolf was missing, and he'd heard she'd been killed on their trip, but he had no idea that...
You loved Mina.
Tears slipped down Suri's cheeks as she nodded. Suri, Malcolm said, you have to make another Gilarabrin, or everyone will die. Not just us, but the Gularoons, too. And if the Frey succeed in winning here, the Fane will order his army into Rulin, where he'll scorch the fields, burn the villages and dolls, and hunt every last human to extinction. As bad as that sounds, it won't end there. The Fane has lost reason, gone mad. Malcolm looked to the three dwarfs standing by the anvil. He knows the Belgriclungrian people helped. He knows about the iron weapons and the Orinfar.
We didn't give either of those, Frost protested. The Orinfar was found in an old roll. And as for iron, he pointed at Roan, we didn't give that. She stole it.
Roan got to her feet. And you stole the same secret from the old one.
We didn't steal it. My ancestors made a trade.
Which your ancestors didn't honour, which means you stole it.
Frost didn't answer.
And this isn't iron.
Roan let her hand run over a sheet of metal lying on the table behind her.
It has iron in it, but I changed the process. This is a different metal, harder, lighter, and it won't tarnish or rust. But you're right. I did steal the idea. Most of it. I improved on the concept, but the majority I got from the rubbings.
Still touching the shiny metal, she added,
I shouldn't hide that. Everyone should know the truth.
She nodded.
Yes. I did steal this. So that's what I will call it. Steal.
Her lower lip quivered as she nodded.
Yes, that's a good name. There's no R in steal.
It doesn't matter.
Malcolm's voice lowered to a sympathetic tone.
What matters is that the Fane believes the Belgriclungrians broke the agreement they had with Erevan. Lothian will seek to do what Fenelaus refused to. He'll march on Belgrig, slaughter his way south, and destroy Drumundor with as little problem as you've seen here. Malcolm stared at the three dwarfs. Your people will be destroyed, along with the humans. Two massive branches from the Tree of Life severed. And that's too much of a shock for the old gal to sustain. With no outside enemies, the Frey will devolve. Some have already broken their covenant with Ferrol, ignored the Law of the Horn, and killed each other. In time, more will seek to rid themselves of the Miralith, or the Miralith will seek to purify themselves and eliminate the other tribes. A population like theirs, that reproduces so slowly, can't survive a civil war. The goblins will see their opportunity and attack. Then it will be the Grenmorians against the goblins, and civilization will vanish, snuffed out before it ever had a chance to truly bloom.
Suri glared at him.
So, I have to do this or the world ends? Is that what you're saying? Is there anything else you want to add? How about the sun? Will it go out? Will the moon fall? Will all the lakes, rivers, and streams dry up?
Actually, there is one more thing, Malcolm said.
Then looked down at Arion.
This is part of what she needed you to do. Why you had to live and become a butterfly.
At the sound of that last word, Suri gasped. She clutched her body tighter, and her breath grew shallower as she glared at him.
Her art, Malcolm explained. Her ties with the world whispered the message in her ears. That was her gift, the one Fenelaus saw. But neither of them fully understood. Everything Arion did since coming to Dal Ren has led you to this point. She worked hard to provide you with the power to save your people and hers. The treasure brought back from Neith wasn't iron or steel. It was the knowledge you gained from Mina's sacrifice. Suri, your sister didn't die to save the nine of you. She sacrificed herself to save the world.
Malcolm offered a knowing smile.
She truly was the wisest of wolves.
The tattoos came together again, as Suri bounced back from the blow Malcolm had delivered. She looked angry. Mina was a subject Suri avoided. The wolf's death was something Wraith knew to step carefully around. Malcolm was dancing on a narrow ledge of a very high cliff.
"How do you know?" Suri demanded. "How do you know about the butterfly?"
She pointed at Arion.
"Did she tell you?"
"No," Malcolm said. "But that's not important."
"It is!"
Suri rose up to her knees to face him.
"No, it isn't. What's important is that what I'm telling you is true. If it isn't, just say so."
Suri stared at Malcolm with a wild look that terrified Wraith. The mystic was breathing hard, her teeth clenched, as if she was deciding whether to make Malcolm explode or not. Her breathing slowed, and the muscles in her face relaxed.
"Doesn't matter,"
she replied, while looking over at Arion.
"I'm all out of friends to kill."
The smithy fell silent then. From outside, the sounds of people digging and heaving stones entered the open doorway. Suri threw her head back and wiped her eyes. Rhone stared at her work table, and the dwarves inspected their boots.
"Is she?" Malcolm asked.
"I'm clearly not in the running," Tressa said. "For once, being universally hated is a good thing."
"Is she, Wraith?"
Malcolm looked at him.
"Is she what?"
he asked. Malcolm waited.
"Don't look at him," Suri said. "Why are you looking at him?"
Malcolm continued to stare. The man who didn't know how to use a spear and had never seen a doll was gone. No longer the clueless ex-slave whom Wraith had saved from death in the wilderness. There were no questions in those eyes, no fear. All Wraith saw was sadness, sympathy, and patience as he waited for a response.
"Are you saying—"
Wraith began, then faltered.
"Is he saying what I think he is?"
Malcolm nodded,
You wanted to make a difference.
The words punched him in the gut, and it was Wraith's turn to look devastated.
You can make your life matter.
You mean I can make my death matter?
Wait, what? Ron asked. He's suggesting that Suri kill Wraith to make the Gilarabrin,
Rain said.
Suri stared aghast at everyone.
Malcolm stayed focused on Wraith.
She gave you all the food. She took from herself and Kaelin, and gave it all to you. She did it so you would live. Just as Arion sensed the importance in Suri, so too did your mother understand that one day you would be needed. She wasn't a mystic or a Miralith. She didn't need to be. Elan spoke to her, just as it did to Arion. But your mother understood it as intuition, as belief. She sacrificed herself and your sister, so that one day you would be here, and that you would have the courage to make a similar choice. Her sacrifice was not to save her remaining child, but to save everyone's sons and daughters.
Outside the smithy, the dead were pulled from the wreckage of the ruins of Alanrist. Inside that building, Wraith wept. Trapped in the shrine without a window, Persephone lamented that she hadn't seen the sun set. It would be her last, and she wanted to say goodbye to the sun. Everything had gone so wrong so quickly. All of it her fault. She should have had a better plan to ignite the signal fire. That was a stupid mistake. She should have kept more troops in the fortress. She should have ordered the Orenfar runes scribed over everything, not just the outer walls. She should have had it tattooed on every person. When looking back, all of the mistakes were easy to see, and so tragic because the first day had seemed so promising. Everyone thought they'd won. A report had just arrived that the Thane's Miralith were creating bridges across the Granford Gorge.
"We'll make the last stand up here," Nephron told the Galantians, as they gathered around Persephone's bed, along with Moya, Padera, and Bryn.
"You can't fight them," Moya said.
"If they come in here, I can and will," Tekchin replied.
"No, you can't." She was firm. "You can't kill another Frey."
"Yes, I can," Tekchin growled. He pointed at her with his sword. "If they try to kill you, trust me, I can."
"I don't want you to."
"She's right," Persephone said. "It's not worth it. You've already sacrificed too much on our behalf. If we're going to lose anyway, what's the point of cursing your souls in the process? Maybe if you surrender, the Fane will spare your lives."
"She's right," Nephron said. "The Fane's anger will focus on me. You can't break Feral's law."
"I'm not going to just stand here and watch them die," Tekchin said.
"Then leave,"
Moya told him. Her voice was cold.
"All of you should just go. I'm sure you know a way out. Some back exit, some warren hole. Go on and leave us."
"Moya," Persephone scolded, "don't be so cruel."
"She's not," Tekchin said. "She's being brave. She's being exactly what any of us would be. She's being a Galantian."
"She is, isn't she?"
Rygor grinned at her.
"Proved herself in battle, too, against a giant monster, in a one-on-one with a chieftain, and in a melee."
Ares nodded. "And she's the best in the world with that bow of hers."
They each looked at Moya critically. No one scoffed. No one laughed.
A rune? Nephron asked them all with a smirk. And a woman to boot?
Tekchin nodded.
Look at me, Grigor said. I'm no pretty Frey.
I'm not sure that's an argument in her favor, Nephron told the giant. But Ares kept nodding.
What makes you think I even want to be in your lousy club?
Moya asked, but her tone lacked the usual bite.
You don't understand, Tekchin said. Galantian isn't a group or organization. It's just a word. A Frey word.
Moya, Persephone said, Galantian means hero.
At its core, it means the best, Nephron said. In Instaria tradition, he is Galantian who epitomizes the best of the tribe's values. Honor, martial skill, and bravery.
He looked at Vorath and Anwyr, who both nodded, as did Ares.
And so seven once more becomes eight.
Moya looked from one to another, each smiling back at her.
As nice as all that is, and thanks for the vote of confidence, you really need to leave.
Running away isn't very heroic, is it?
Ares said.
Anwyr nodded. We appear to be trapped by our own ideals.
Moya sighed and pointed to the east.
Seven bridges, people! They're making them right now! Climb what's left of the Spyrock and look for yourself. And we don't have walls anymore. Come dawn, they'll kill us all. And since you can't help by sticking around, you ought to go.
I will, if you will.
Tekchin grinned at her.
You know I can't.
You can, Persephone told her. The pain in her stomach was still awful, but she had a little more movement than before. She could sit up, and she was, but sitting in a bed did little to enhance her authority.
As Kenig, I'm the only one who has to stay. This is my mess, and I bear the responsibility for it. No one else does.
I do, Moya said.
I know, you're my shield, and a damn fine one. But that doesn't mean you have to die with me. I won't leave you.
Persephone sighed.
You're being stupid. You all are.
Moya nodded.
Maybe, but if that's the case, there are a lot of dumb people in Alenrist right now because no one's leaving. I saw them on the way here. They're rebuilding the walls a stone at a time. Bakers, weavers, and former farmers are out there stacking stones. I asked Bergen why he was bothering. I expected him to say it was to hide behind us something. But you know what he said?
She paused to swallow, an act that took effort.
He said, to protect the Kenig. I told him that was my job. He said, no, that's everyone's job.
That's wrong. It's the Kenig's job to protect all of you, Persephone said.
Most of the time, maybe, but not today.
Moya picked up a bundle she'd laid near the door and placed it on the bed. Unfolding it, she revealed two long daggers of the famous shiny metal.
Compliments of Rhone.
She handed one to Bryn and one to Persephone.
Are these to use on the enemy or ourselves? Persephone asked. I suppose that's for you to decide.
Moya started for the door.
Need to check things. You do too, don't you, Tekchin?
The Frey looked puzzled for a moment.
Check on...
Oh! Sure.
He grinned.
Be back in a minute, he told the rest of them. I have to check on things.
Moya waved to Persephone.
Might take him longer than that. I'll be back in an hour or two. Going down to the courtyard? Bryn asked. Passing through it? Why?
Thought I'd walk with you.
Bryn, we...
Moya stopped.
You want to see Tesh, don't you?
Bryn blushed.
Maybe.
Those who are sticking around, Nephron said, let's get back to reinforcing the doors. Those bridges will be completed sooner than we want.
That means he's going to point at things he wants me to move.
Drygor winked at Persephone as he and the others filed out.
Nephron?
Persephone stopped him. The Frey Lord lingered at the door, looking back as the others moved past. He stood straight, that bold chin held high, the lamplight gleaming on him.
Dashing.
That really was the word for him. His blonde hair was thrown back over his shoulders, his bronze armor polished to a dazzling shine, emphasizing his shoulders and chest.
Yes, dashing.
I've been thinking about what Arion said.
Persephone struggled once more to sit up straighter. She always felt so small when talking to Nephron.
About sending a bird to the Fane, and telling them about Suri.
Can't do that.
Why can't?
Oh.
She paused, concerned.
Was the pigeon loft destroyed?
So much had been lost in that last assault.
No. Alan Rist still has its full complement of those. But we've gone over this.
You saw what the Miralith did to Arion.
Suri probably survived because they didn't know about her.
Besides, I don't think you know how bird couriers work. They are trained to fly home. Home in this case is a coop in the palace in Estramnadon.
The army is across the chasm. By all accounts, so is the Fane. A message sent by bird won't reach him.
But Arion was so adamant about it,
so certain it could help save both our peoples. I hate speaking ill of the dead, but Arion was Miralith. I've never trusted them. Now, if there is nothing else, this is my fortress, what's left of it. I should see about securing it the best I can. Don't want to disappoint the Fane. He'll be expecting a valiant last stand from the Instaria.
Can I ask you a question before you go?
You're the Keenig, the Frey Lord said with a smile. Your wish is my command.
She smirked.
I've been thinking about your proposal.
Nephron chuckled. Little point on that now.
I actually think that now is the perfect time to think about it. There's no pressure anymore.
This appeared to puzzle him. Then he shrugged it off and asked, "What did you want to know?"
"I was wondering, well, let's say the Fane and his army just vanished with the rising sun. Do you think you could ever love me?"
"Love you?"
The words mystified him.
"I'm not even certain what love is."
"That rune word doesn't translate well, you know. And as far as my understanding takes me, it isn't all that clearly defined in runic culture."
"So, let me ask. Do you?"
"Do I what? Do I know what love is, or do I think I could love you?"
"Take your pick."
"I think it's possible to love anyone."
"Well, there's your answer, then."
"That's my answer. I want to know yours."
Nephron stared at her and licked his lips.
"You want an honest answer, don't you?"
"Yes. Yes, I do."
He nodded.
"Honestly, as I said, I don't know if I understand what love is to begin with, much less what you may happen to think it is. I think you're a decent person. Above average intelligence. You're practical, usually logical, and don't annoy me too much. Except when talking about love. But if it helps, let me clarify my position. Should a miracle occur,
and we survive tomorrow. I would want to marry you for political reasons, as a means of uniting our people and increasing our power. I won't be faithful. You should know that. And as one-sided or as unfair as it may seem, I would insist that you be. Not because I would be upset if you entertained another man, Frey, Durg, or Grenmorian for that matter, but because your children will rule the world we make, and my bastards won't have any claim, making my infidelity irrelevant. Make no mistake about it. Our union would be a business arrangement, plain and simple, and one that would benefit me more than you. But ultimately, our union would provide the most reward for the Ruhn and Instaria peoples. Still, I hoped it would be based on mutual respect and honesty.
I see.
That was all she could think to say. What else could she say?
Doesn't matter any more, I suppose.
No. I can't see how it would. Anything else? She shook her head, and the dashing fellow in shining armor disappeared. Staring at the empty doorway, Persephone remembered Wraith's words.
I've loved you from the start, and it doesn't matter if you can't love me. Whether it's because you're still in love with Reglan's memory, or because you want to marry Nephron. None of that matters, because even now.
She remembered his voice, how it cracked and quavered, how his hands were squeezed into fists, the passion on his face. Then she thought of Nephron. You're practical, usually logical.
Usually, she thought.
Persephone shifted weight to throw her legs off the bed, but the pain ripped through her again.
Okay, okay!
She would wait for Bryn or Moya to come back. Then she'd send for Wraith. She wanted to see him before the attack. She needed to tell him the truth.
I have time. Another hour or two won't make a difference.
Chapter 27 Malcolm. We called him Malcolm, but I realize now that was not his only name. The Book of Bryn.
Need a sword to put the name on, Roan said, concerned.
The smithy was silent except for the low thrum of the furnace. Always burning, the fire kept the big room hot and the walls shimmering. In that fiery glow, everyone watched Wraith. Everyone except Suri, who stared at the floor. Roan's eyes betrayed a panic that Wraith didn't understand, until he realized all the weapons she'd made had been handed out. Not a shield, spear, helm, or sword lay on the racks. Plenty of metal remained, most of it in a pile of rock beside the pile of charcoal, next to the pile of stacked wood. Wraith felt the pommel of the weapon at his side.
Can it be any sword? Doesn't even have to be a sword, Frost said. Just something strong to etch the name on. But a sword would be best.
What name?
Your name, Rain explained. Your real name.
Wraith is my real name.
Suri shook her head.
Not what your parents called you. The name Elan gave you.
Wraith didn't know what that meant, but didn't think it important. He unbuckled his sword belt. Roan got up and reached out for it, but Suri shook her head.
That one already has a name.
Wraith sighed.
We're in the middle of a war and no one here has a sword.
"What about your father's blade?" Malcolm asked.
"It's broken."
"We're in a smithy, surrounded by the world's premier swordsmiths. I think they can do something about that. Where is the blade?"
"I left it in the barracks."
Malcolm nodded and rushed out.
"Can you fix it?"
Wraith asked.
"That blade is almost pure copper," Frost said. "Would make a lousy sword for such a noble thing."
"We have tin," Roan said, then looked at the dwarfs. "We could make a bronze sword. Be a lot faster to forge than iron."
"True," Flood said. "Copper and tin melt fast, and don't need much heat. So it'll take less time."
Rain was shaking his head.
"I think we can do better. We could make black bronze."
"Need gold and silver for that, lad,"
Frost replied.
Reaching up, Rain pulled free the golden torque from his neck. He held it out.
"Use this."
Frost and Flood looked at their companion in surprise. Rain frowned at the torque.
"It's only a trophy. What good is it if Erevan invades Belgrig? Our people need to contribute something. If sacrifice can save all of us, then all of us should sacrifice. And in light of Wraith's contribution, this is indeed the least I can do."
"Still need silver," Frost said.
That's when Tressa stepped forward. Although it took a bit of work, she managed to wrench a ring off her finger.
"I was supposed to give this back when I returned the chieftain's ring, but..."
She looked down at it.
"I'd lost my husband, and thought I deserved to have something. And the ring looked better on my hands than the one Conniger had given me when we married. Consider it a contribution from Persephone and me."
She held it out.
"Take it."
Frost took the silver circle of metal and eyed it. Malcolm returned with the broken blade, pausing to look at Tressa.
"Strange, isn't it? How in the right moment, even a vain, selfish act, like keeping a ring you don't deserve, can be exchanged for a noble deed like this. And how a lost soul can, unwittingly, it seems, take a first step toward redemption."
Tressa stared at him, her eyes widening. She raised her hand and pressed it against her mouth, muttering through her fingers.
"Every single person in this room must do their part."
Malcolm nodded and laid the blade down.
Herkimer's sword was the same as it had been, but in the light of the forge it appeared redder. Wraith could see the multitude of scratches, pits, and divots. The edge was jagged, unintentionally serrated where his father had marred it in countless battles, but knowing nothing of metal, he couldn't repair the damage.
"My father died for this sword," Wraith said. "But not literally. A man doesn't die for a piece of copper."
Roan looked up at him, puzzled.
"It's pride. False glory purchased with and steeped in the blood of innocence."
He looked at Roan with hopeful eyes.
"If you can, I'd like you to make it into something better."
Roan nodded toward Flood, who stoked the furnace. She placed the broken copper sword into the furnace. Flood worked the bellows, puffing the coals a bright, eye-dazzling white. Frost took the circlet of gold. He measured off an amount, hewed it into two pieces, and added the larger to the furnace. Then he added Tressa's ring to the crucible. The glow of the open furnace lit up all of their faces, as Flood pumped the bellows and the metals merged. Feeling the heat, Wraith turned away
and found Malcolm sitting in a darkened corner opposite the one Suri had claimed. They all sought space for solitude, each pair of eyes staring down demons.
"Hey," Wraith said, overturning a bucket to sit on.
Malcolm, who had his back against the wall, his knees bent, glanced up and offered a sad smile.
"You've been holding out on me, haven't you?"
With a guilty look, Malcolm held up two fingers, indicating something very small.
"Did you know this would happen? When you hit Shigon with a rock, did you know about this?"
Wraith gestured at Roan and the dwarfs.
"Which answer would make you feel better?"
"Well, on the one hand, if you knew, then you're something of a lying bastard who manipulated me for a year."
Malcolm nodded.
"On the other hand, if you hadn't hit Shigon, I'd have died a year ago. Died alone and forgotten, on a rocky fork of land."
Malcolm continued nodding.
"Don't suppose it really matters much now?"
Malcolm shook his head.
"So what are you? Some kind of mystic like Suri?"
He glanced at her as she sat hugging her knees, rocking as if in pain.
"I'm not a mystic."
"What then? And don't tell me you're just a slave. I'm not buying that anymore."
"I was a slave. Sort of. Only..."
"Only what?"
"Well, I'm not sure you can really call it slavery when I volunteered for the position. Took me 3 days to convince Nephron's father to seal the collar around my neck. Zephyron was a wise, generous, and honourable Frey. He was my first choice."
"First choice for what?"
"Emperor."
"What's an emperor?"
"Like a Koenig, only bigger. Instead of being the ruler of all the clans, an emperor would be the leader of the world. A single leader would have the power to end conflicts between whole peoples, to disperse knowledge, and bring lasting peace to everyone, to unite what was broken. But Nephron's father refused to listen. I suppose he wouldn't have been the right person for the task if he had. Now Nephron will become the first emperor."
"Nephron? Not Persephone?"
Malcolm only smiled.
"She marries him, right?"
Malcolm sighed.
"Certain things need to fall in a certain way. It isn't always nice, and it's rarely fair, but that's the way it has to be in order to fix what was broken."
"And what is it that was broken?"
No smile this time. Malcolm looked squarely at him and said,
"The world."
Wraith laughed, but Malcolm wasn't joking, and he stopped.
"Okay. So how was it broken? Or don't you know?"
"Oh, I know. Believe me, I know. I was the one who broke it."
Malcolm had been a puzzle ever since they met. A fussy, delicate man who knew so little and so much. Wraith understood Malcolm had lied to him, or at least avoided the truth. What Wraith found surprising was that he didn't care. Maybe it was the lack of smugness. Wraith saw no malice, greed, or spite in Malcolm. He had no idea what benefit his friend might have gained from the deception. There didn't appear to have been any. And there was an overwhelming sadness and sympathy that spilled from the man. A sense of guilt that had Wraith feeling sorry for him.
"Malcolm? Who are you?"
At this, the one-time servant who Wraith first imagined as a weasel or a fox, the man who turned out to be a bit of both.